This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and today we have an interesting discussion on a book that Jerry Damron has written. It's called Lucrative Sustainability for Cities. Our panel today is Jerry Damron, Mark Scully with People's Action for Clean Energy, and David Kay at Cornell University. So, Jerry, why don't you start us out?
Okay, Sierra, very glad to be on the call today, and I very much enjoyed my talk with Mark and David yesterday. We had a little bit of a preview conversation. Excuse me. Sierra asked me to call. I live in Hawaii, Maui, Hawaii, but I happen to be traveling on the East Coast right now. And Sierra asked me to talk a little bit about our Lucrative Sustainability Solutions program that we've been developing over the last 4+ years. And I was going to talk a little bit about what is lucrative sustainability, what are the proven solutions that are out there in the marketplace, what are some of the tools that can support a new lucrative sustainability movement of best practices, and then a little discussion of what we see as some of the biggest obstructions and obstacles to implementation of practical, simple, straightforward, and profitable solutions to the sustainability crisis. And lastly, I thought I'd talk for a few minutes about the Go Green Cities Green Futures National Plan, what we're hoping to do next in 2020 and beyond. And then I really welcome discussion from the group and input as to what you guys see that's relevant in the work that you're doing, and really appreciate anything you can add into the conversation that might add some perspective to what my team is attempting to do. Does that make sense? Everybody with me?
Sure. We're all muted. It takes the time to unmute. That's
okay. Very good.
Well, to start off,
all of us who've been involved in this for 2 years, 5 years, or 20 years, we already know how bad it is. And we also know that people are sick or downright numb from hearing about the problem. So anybody who's paying attention really wants solutions. But what must those solutions be? And the group that I put together about 4 years ago, which has been over 100 citizens, scientists, and activists supporting the Go Green movement in Hawaii, we have decided amongst ourselves that the real solutions are not going to come from the federal government. They're probably not going to come very forthrightly from the states. So they're needing to be solutions that are implementable on the local level. They need to be solutions that are already proven and demonstrated. They need to be simple and straightforward. They need to be duplicatable so that they're not so complex that any municipality could understand it, learn about it, adapt it, and implement it themselves. And then we also came up with 5 criteria when we launched our lucrative sustainability research. About 4 years ago, we decided that the projects we wanted to seek out had to meet these 5 criteria. The first one is any good project had to really slash substantial amounts of carbon, methane, and the other greenhouse gas pollutants. Secondly, any really valid and meaningful project needed to be demonstrated to be able to protect or restore local or regional ecosystems. Thirdly, any project worth its salt had to be shown to improve the quality of life for a majority of the citizens within the community. And then the last 2 criteria are financial. The first one is that any project that we would put out there as a potential template to other municipalities would have to require little or no capital investment from that municipality. Because as we have spoken with, you know, probably 100 municipalities just over the last year, they all say, oh, we'd love to do sustainability, but we have no budget. So we only selected projects that could be implemented without any internal capital. And then the fifth criteria is, you know, we don't really have time to dabble. We need projects that are not only going to slash huge amounts of carbon, protect the environment, but we need projects that are going to earn money. My research and my team's research, we've found that, you know, people guess anywhere from 5% to 20% of the mayors and the city people in any given municipality, in any given region, 5% to 20% deeply care about and are concerned and activated about the challenges of the climate crisis, the climate emergency. But we've also found that 100% of mayors, city managers, city engineers, CFOs of municipalities, 100% care about money. So if we only have 10 years to take substantial action towards universally shifting our culture from practices away from practices that are creating climate change and towards practices that are going to solve the climate crisis and reverse the trend, these projects better make money and better be easily demonstrable to produce positive financial earnings. So our fifth criteria was, hey, let's only include projects in our recommendations for lucrative sustainability templates that earn on average for the average municipality over $1 million a year. And we thought, well, you know, that may be a high bar. $1 million a year, if it's over a couple decades, means any project would be earning $10 million over 10 years, $20 million over 20 years or more. So those were our criteria. I was very fortunate in Maui. We have a lot of creative and very intelligent people living on our island. And I got to assemble, out of 100 people who would show up for my talks, 13 teammates. I have had a PhD agronomist. I had a master's level sustainability person. I had a medical doctor. I had a 30-year educator from the Waldorf system. There are about 13 of us, or about 20 that worked on and off, but there are 13 who really worked consistently. After a divorce and one of my business collapses, I grew 8 multimillion-dollar businesses, but one collapsed in 2008. I had $95,000 in savings left. I devoted my $95,000 in savings and about $150,000 that we raised from about 6-7 individuals. And over 3 years, we went out and studied the top 200 sustainability projects we could find from all over the world. The categories, we came up with 10 simple practical categories. We called them the 10 pillars of sustainability. And you can guess what most of them are. Renewable energy, green electric transportation, regenerative organic local agriculture, ecosystem restoration and protection, green buildings and energy efficiency, recycling and waste management, community planning, community health. And our 10th category was community education, outreach, and celebration. Because what we determined is, unless you're going to motivate the entire citizenry, you're probably not going to make the kind of massive local cultural transformation that we're going to need to see to make it happen. We were very fortunate. We worked our hearts out. Out of 200 plus projects, we discovered 30 what we called super green projects. And these phenomenal projects excelled in all five areas of our five criteria. As a matter of fact, those 30 projects for 30 municipalities were delivering the elimination of 5.5 million tons of carbon every year. And those 30 projects were delivering $1.05 billion every year for those 30 munis. So pretty exciting to find projects that are that efficacious, so that can be offered up to to other communities. Now, Sierra wants me to not talk very long, which is a challenge for anybody. You can ask my wife or any of my past colleagues or employees.
Yeah, Jerry, keep going for a while. Keep going. It's too interesting. So okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So I could talk for 2 hours or more about the 30 projects, but just to give you a little taste, one project, which I've mentioned on other calls and many of you are quite familiar with, is that Yolo County, with $0 capital investment, other than some salaries of top people in their group, put together a 152% solar farm, 6.8 megawatt solar project on empty land that the county owned and was not using. They started saving about $1.7 million every year on their PG&E bill. And because the brilliant gentleman, Terry Vernon, was able to talk the counselors, the supervisors, into building a larger 6.8 megawatt project, even though their load for the county buildings was 5.2 megawatts, they started making about $600,000 a year. So their total earnings from savings and earnings is about $2.3 million a year for a little rural county in California. Now that's $2.3 million a year, $23 million over 10 years, and $46 million net cash flow over 20 years. And that particular project was penciled out that it is going to produce over $60 million over 30 to 32 years for the county. And also Burlington, Vermont, they went to 100% renewables using solar plus wind plus hydro. And they also used outside vendors who funded the project 100%, so they did not have to put capital investment into most of the 100% renewable program. And they were found that they were pocketing about $42 million over 20 years. Another project I really like to point out is in the green transportation arena. Eindhoven, Holland, discovered they were spending 39,000 euros a year just on diesel fuel for their stinky, loud, old buses, their transit buses. They found a company, CETA, in Europe that would lease them brand new, clean, quiet, smooth, emission-free transit buses for €25,000 a year, and that would include the electric fuel and the electric charging station. So they realized they were making €14,000 per vehicle per year by just switching to these totally new vehicles. They got 43 brand new, gorgeous, smooth, clean, quiet transit buses for their citizens and pocketed over 128 million euros over 20 years. So that's what we call a win-win-win, a win economically, a win ecologically, and a win in terms of quality of life. Now, I could go on and tell you about project in David's area in Cornell, where they have a local farmers market that moves $10 million a year in local food with no middleman profits, where the citizens are saving about 20% on that wonderful local produce and products. That's about $2 million a year, $40 million over 20 years, staying in the citizens' pockets while they enjoy wonderful quality local products. A Chicago brownfields project where a contaminated region was leased to a solar company for $1 a year. The solar company went in and totally remediated the area, put in a beautiful solar project, planted trees and shrubs, completely reclaimed the area, and along with 49 other projects for restoration of habitat, they were producing about $2 million a year which it was expanded to net them $200 million over 20 years and created over 3,000 new green collar jobs. So I would love to talk more about the 30 projects, and I'm very happy to talk with anyone offline about the other projects and the whole lucrative sustainability program, but Sierra wants this to become more of a discussion. I would like to say that we have some tools that we're now using to help promote and support cities and counties to use and to learn from, adapt, plan for, and implement low-risk, low-cost copycat projects in their own cities and their own counties. The first thing is we have a guidebook, which we've been selling for $2,000, and in November we're offering it for $1,000 to cities and counties. And then we have a two-day training. A couple of the cities and counties that bought our book said, look, we love it, but we really don't understand it thoroughly. So we created the two-day or four-half-day training where we can come in and train the city manager, the sustainability director, the CFO, the economic development director, the city engineers. We can, in 2 days or four half-days, we can train them on all 30 projects. And as part of the training, after we present each project and have a little discussion, we ask each team member to rate that project as it relates to the needs of their city or county. So every teammate will rate the project on a 1 to 10 scale. Is this an ideal match economically? Is it an ideal match environmentally? And how does it match as an urgent project that really syncs up with our most urgent needs? So at the end of the two-day training, we hand the city team a numerical listing of how their own team scored the entire compendium of 30 projects, so they see their top five projects as they, not us, as they rated them for appropriateness and attractiveness for their municipality. So that's the training guidebook, and then there's the two-day training. And then we offer a 30-day project feasibility study with a report in 30 days on the top project that they agree is their most attractive project. And in 30 days, we give them a report that gives them our assessment of how appropriate that is for them and what the obstacles might be and what the supports might be. Then we'll also offer a 30-day financing outreach project where we go to their past funders of capital projects. We also go to Wells Fargo, to community banks, and other regional or national lenders to educate those lenders on the project the city or county wants to do. So we actually get multiple finance partners bidding on the project for them in 30 days. Then we offer a 3-month step-by-step planning process so that their team can actually, with our team, compile a step-by-step process, which could be anywhere from 60 to 200 steps. So they have a very high level of confidence that they're covering all the bases in their low-risk project, so they can proceed with confidence and reduce their fear. And then the last product we're offering them is an approximate 9 to 12 month implementation support process where we actually help their team manage their timeline and actually manage that plan that we put together with them. So we offer it as a menu, so we don't have to say, look, you want to do a $2 million a year project? Our consulting fees are about $200,000. You have to hire us and pay for it. No, we give them the whole menu of options, and they can pick whatever level of support they want, or they can go sequentially through the process so that they're not overspending on support, but we want to make sure that they have the confidence they're going to get the results. So our goal is to support a dozen cities and counties in 2020 to launch their lucrative sustainability program. And we're already starting to train consultants so we can have consultants who can go out and approach other motivated cities and counties and offer them the entire system of support. Now, if Sierra will allow me, I'd kind of like to zip over the 10 biggest obstructions that we see to cities and counties doing renewable energy and these other sustainability projects in these other categories. Is that okay, Sierra? Can we talk about the instructions?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. The first issue that we're running into is we're finding that a lot of city staff have been at this sustainability thing a long time. Many of them have been on staff for 5, 8, 10, and many of them 18 to 20 years. Many of the staff are overwhelmed by the challenge and a little bit burnout. So we're finding that some of them, not all, get excited and motivated by having new solutions. The second thing is, the second biggest challenge we see is most of these cities do what they even refer to as dabbling. They do a little solar project on their maintenance annex. They do some training of the kindergartners on recycling. They buy one electric Nissan Leaf, and they all acknowledge that they're dabbling. And they acknowledge that their mayors have been fine with that in the past because the mayor is able to hold this stuff up and say, hey, we're doing sustainability. But the challenge is it's not slashing carbon 50 to 80%. It's not shifting transportation infrastructure over to a renewable energy run electric vehicles. It's just scratching the surface and trying to feel good about it. The third issue is when these longtime employees and even some shiny-faced new ones are faced with a major goal of doing something substantial instead of something superficial and almost greenwashing-like, their fear of failure really wells up. And what we've been doing so far to help give them confidence is to show them that the cities and counties that have implemented these 30 super projects that are just delivering phenomenal results, they're just normal guys like us, men and women, young people, young men and young women doing these projects and figuring them out. And we have the good fortune of being able to follow the best practice teachings that we have garnered from these other cities and counties, which makes it a lot easier. So we're seeing that the handholding and the step-by-step processes seems to be encouraging a little more confidence, but there's a huge fear of failure. The other thing is they recognize, or they tell us, they have no money. They're beat on all the time. We don't have budget for sustainability. We don't have budget for environmentalism. So we are going out to local community banks and local or regional or even national vendors to propose shared savings programs. Just as you see on energy efficiency, we're proposing shared savings programs on the entire range of broad-based sustainability projects. The other issue is we're in the early stages, and even though we have these 30 wonderful cities and counties to point to, we don't yet have a dozen cities and counties who've committed to lucrative sustainability. We've got 3 that have signed up for the book. We have 16 who are considering the training and the consulting. And we all know the decision-making process. It is laborious. So there's also no established education forum for our lucrative sustainability program. So what we're launching in 2020 is the concept of Sustainability Solution Summit conferences. We'd like to do four of these in 2020, where we can invite cities and counties to come to a three-day, four-day, or five-day forum and learn the 30 projects and get a lot of coaching and support on how they can start making millions with their sustainability. So those are some of the challenges we've had. And we're hoping that some of the people on this call and friends of people on this call are going to find this concept of lucrative sustainability appealing, interesting, and that hopefully we're going to get half of our dozen 2020 leader lucrative sustainability cities and counties through our contacts with the Municipal Sustainability Forum. So we welcome your input. If you know a city or county that's eager to make money or eager to make progress, real substantive progress in sustainability or both, we would be delighted to be introduced to them. And we're also hoping that some people in the network will be introducing us to our consultants, because our model is pretty simple. We train all our consultants in the whole program, and then when they go out and sign up a city or a county, we're going to split that revenue with them 50-50 so that the consultant and the Go Green Cities team are in even-steven collaboration to help these cities and counties be successful. Sarah, sorry to go on for too long, my dear. But I will shut up now, and I welcome comments and questions from the.
Well, that's certainly an interesting proposition you just put out there. Any comments? Anybody?
Has anyone on the call heard of anything like the concept of lucrative sustainability discussed out in the marketplace, or is this a wacky one that's a total new idea?
Okay, I think somebody was trying to talk. It takes a little while for people to unmute, so whoever started out there, go ahead.
Sierra, this is Clina. Unfortunately, I have to hop off the call, but I am hoping to circle back with some possible municipalities that might be interested. So I'm going to circle back the next day or so. But this is terrific, really compelling.
Well, thanks for the feedback. And Sierra sent out a one-pager that has a two-minute sample video on one of the projects. It has a four-minute video link on the overall lucrative sustainability program, and it also has my contact information. I sincerely welcome follow-up emails and phone calls so that our team can collaborate with you dedicated folks across the country to see what we can do to help these cities and counties accelerate their economic and ecological success in the next 10 years.
Okay. David, do you have any comments on this? David Kay?
Sure. I should say, Jerry and I talked yesterday. I think it's really really exciting to see someone like turning this private sector model. I actually work, I don't work that much with the private sector, with entrepreneurs, to do what Jerry is doing, so I don't really know that much. I would, my model, I'm primarily an educator with municipalities in New York State. So we have 22 cities in the state, about a little under 60 counties we have, but then we have 600 villages and over 900. We have a lot of local governments, in our state, and trying to think about the, in one sense that means a lot of potential pests. In another sense it means it's a really task to get on people's radar effectively with something like this. What we usually do it is trying to partner with municipal associations. Very hard to get people's attention. So we try and work with them. We try and work with the state association of counties, the conference of mayors, other groups, and if they buy into to ideas, they kind of have their attention to them already.
We were exhibitors for the Conference of Mayors National Conference in Boston last year. We talked with about 100 mayors. About a third of them were extremely interested, and 8 of them ordered the book at that time. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to reach mayors. And what we're finding is city governments are even slower than county governments. We are finding that leading with the county governments and then bringing in the city governments and offering the city governments an opportunity to jump in with the county at some discounted rate gets them very excited. They just, you know, they're so paranoid of spending any money, even on a 2-day training that's designed to deliver $40 million to them, that anytime you can.
The other thing I was going to say is, you know, because of different powers and duties and authorities and responsibilities, some of the kinds of projects, as I look at your, you know, I look at your 10 pillars and I look at your, the types of projects that you're listed in your 30, some of them would be much more appealing to counties in our state, more to cities, and kind of like targeting, as I'm sure you would do anyway, targeting the different types of projects to the ones that are most relevant to the type of municipality is important. And similarly, I would say about issues of scale, I mean scale of the municipality, you know, some of the numbers that you're throwing around, and you are targeting cities and counties, which is, I think, appropriate, but I think that a lot of our smaller municipalities, which in fact include some small cities, and there's some villages in our state which would also probably be as large or larger than many of our cities, so they might be in your, but the kind of numbers you're tossing around and the examples you have, I think, are most appropriate for the our bigger municipalities. I don't think you'd get the smaller ones to relate very well to your examples. And we talked yesterday, Jerry, about, I think it's, you know, it's implicit in some of your 10 biggest obstacles, but you know, the way we talked about it yesterday, that I think about it is just in terms of decision-making capacity, that the people that you're trying to look at, whether it's with you or you know, with any kind of new idea like this, there is a lot of, if you will, conservatism in sort of taking risks and going out on a limb, even in the context in our state where there's now state mandates, really, to do this in a climate change context and an energy context. So, you know, it's not easy, and I think your kind of salesmanship almost about it will be able, and the priorities that you're putting out there in your 10 pillars, I think, will appeal to some people. You're never going to get them all right away.
David,
wonderful input.
I really agree, and I really appreciate you chiming in. That's why we have identified in the United States, there's 27,000 towns, cities, and villages, 27,000. That's unwieldy. But in the United States, there's only 3,002 counties. That's a good number to write down. 3,000 counties and 1,500 cities with over 25,000 citizens. I've been working with one very progressive village in California. The mayor is hair on fire, passionate, sustainability person. They've only got 3,000 citizens. She's working her heart out to get her fellow council members to do the whole program, to generate 2 million or 1 million for their village. And they invested in the guidebook, but they can't get it to go any further. So there are some frustrations if we expect the small villages to be able to overcome their inherent conservatism and their lack of financial resources for initiating. That's once again why, as you and I discussed yesterday, David, larger cities and counties are looking like our best opportunities. But here's one idea that I'd like to toss out to the group. If you guys can contact me with one city and one county in your state, our idea is to get one city and one county in six states, which would be 12 municipalities going in the coming year. And with those 12 successes, and when we jump in and help them start generating millions of dollars, and we launch the Sustainability Solutions Summit, where they can be our stars to talk about how they're making this money and transforming their carbon footprint and transforming their operations to a cleaner, healthier, more sustainable, and citizen-loving status, then we expect that a dozen or more cities and counties within the state will jump on board, seeing that it is geographically appropriate and possible.
Can I jump in, Sierra?
Please.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. This is Okshan. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'll introduce myself. Yeah, thank you. So this is Okshan Wei again, Jerry. I'm a researcher at University of Connecticut, and I've presented sort of research in this forum around some of the similar issues, like why some cities are more resistant to sustainable energy programs and why, you know, what kind of explanations there are. So I find your discussion very convincing. I made similar observations, framing these issues in terms of economic benefits, I think is a winning proposition that really works. I agree with your other observation about most cities sort of dabbling around these issues. I'm now observing it firsthand as I'm part of the sustainability task force in my own town. And so sort of beyond the research, I'm sort of observing very directly, and it's both encouraging that there are little things being done, but at the same time, it's also a little pessimistic that things move very slowly. So your program, I think, would certainly expedite things and make more impact. And I so applaud you for doing this. But I wanted to sort of, I think one of the challenges that you mentioned as well is communicating this to town task forces or town officials. In Connecticut, there is maybe you've heard of this, there's a network called Sustainable CT. And it took us, it's taking towns a while to sort of jump on board and benefit from the sort of the consulting services of this network, of this organization. And they do it for free. You know, this is just, they provide a list of action items and they talk about success stories. There's certification attached to it. So some of the things you propose are kind of being done at this point in Connecticut through this organization. So I wonder if it's, but it's again dabbling, right? There are 100 something action items and they worth certain points and people can see success stories, best practices. And but there's no guarantee. We all kind of dabble around it in our towns. So I wonder if your organization can contact maybe sort of these bigger networks in states and try, because there's a trust that's been built over time. So it might be harder for towns to engage some other organization or some other group and leave this sort of network. So I wonder if your in could be through them, kind of convincing them to pair it with what they have. That's the first thing that came to my mind, is building that trust.
Sandra, thank you so much. Great, great feedback, and I would be delighted to be introduced to those people. Maybe there's a way we can collaborate, because we, our group, Green Future, is the new consultancy that is determined to bring vendors, money, step-by-step process to really dramatically shift the level of confidence and dramatically shift the perception of risk downward. You know, when we can provide a project, we can say, look, this is 95% de-risked. And we want to bring you the money, the processes, the proven colleagues, and support you. Not just say you should do this and run away, but we'll be there with you in the planning and in the implementation if you want our help. And we'll even become financial partners with you if you prefer that, so that you know that we're looking out for our financial interests as we're looking out for yours. That's an option they can select. But thanks. Please get in touch with me via email so that we can talk about next steps in Connecticut. We'd love to support if we can. Mark, are you on the call?
I was just going to say, Mark. Mark or Bernie.
Yes.
Any comments there?
I also had a really good discussion with Jerry yesterday, and I think a couple of things are really exciting to me about the work they're doing. One is the focus on the economic value that these projects add, right? We I think most of us have experience. It's very hard to sell these on just doing the right thing. Towns and counties and municipalities are financially constrained everywhere, I think. So being able to show the economic value is fantastic. So the idea of lucrative, clean energy and sustainability is a great one. What we're doing with People's Action for Clean Energy in Connecticut is sort of the poor cousin of this, but we work with towns, typically with volunteers, with representatives from clean energy task forces and commissions and teams like that. And we've developed a sort of basic methodology to help a town group like this take stock to assess their energy usage and how that might look under a more aggressive scenario of strategic electrification and aggressive efficiency. We look at how much they can actually site in town. And our passion right now is producing tools, I think, on a much smaller scale than what Jerry has in this book and in their consulting services. But we've got a website that's about to go live. And what we're putting on there is an open source resource for a wide range of programs, initiatives, policies, regulations that towns can adopt. If you want to promote efficiency in your town, what have other towns done? What success stories have they seen? And just post a bunch of case studies and documents and RFPs and videos. So, the different categories are, how to get your team organized. We've got an off-the-shelf energy plan that a town could take and get up to speed and have an energy plan up and running fairly quickly. We've seen towns struggle with that process for months and years, and we see the value, the really, really high value of having a plan, taking it around and getting feedback and getting buy-in, and sort of documenting and showing a roadmap. So we found that to be a really helpful tool. And there's just a bunch of different categories, and you go through the website, and as I say, there's efficiency, there's heat pumps, there's transportation, microgrids, renewables, community choice aggregation. So it's open source, and it's what we're really trying to do is build this thing out so that, you know, as towns want to do things, they're not reinventing the wheel. So maybe I'll pause there, see if there's any questions or comments, or if Bernie wants to pipe in.
Bernie?
Not too much to add to that, other than I think this has been a good conversation, and I fundamentally think getting people off of what I would call top dead center, where they get paralyzed, as was said before, by either they've been at it so long that they're kind of discouraged, or they think that they can't possibly get the money, is one of the big values that that these approaches offer. So letting people know they can get big, significant, lucrative things in motion, even in a municipal setting where they, at least in Connecticut, I don't know about the rest of the country, nobody seems to have very much money.
Bernie, that thank you so much for those comments. I have also experienced, even in people who deeply, deeply care about our environment and about the future, a paralysis. And I believe that our industry has made a mistake in that we have gone out and extolled the virtues of doing a plan. And cities will spend 2 and 3 and 4 years to come up with a hypothetical climate action plan. And it's all hypothetical. And after 4 years of work, they're so proud of themselves, when it takes 6 months to synthesize the articulation of their plan, and it's all policies and future ideas and hypothetical and proclamations. And I think it's time to shift from plans to specific projects, because the projects is where you actually make progress, slash carbon, shift attitudes, create momentum, and change your society. So it's got to be project, which is action focused. There's an old saying in life that knowledge is power. I had a brilliant CEO one time that said the old adage that knowledge is power is bull. It's what you do with what you know that is 100% of the value. So if we can help our cities shift from feeling so good about themselves for coming up with a plan and shifting to taking action in a project that's going to make money and create momentum and really do stuff with carbon, with quality of life, with the healthfulness of our local and regional society, that's going to create action and a culture of action and hopefully a lucrative sustainability movement that other cities are going to be excited to jump on board with. That's our vision.
This is Bernie. Absolutely. And it's interesting that you made the comment about knowledge. What we find with a lot of business owners trying to get them involved in either putting on renewable energy or taking efficiency measures, which will save them money on day one, they say, no, I got to get out there. I've got to do my sales. I've got to tend to my knitting. It's ironic because if you can cut your operating cost, it makes sales a lot easier to accomplish because your price – you're not going to be as impacted by price shocks in natural gas or oil or electricity, and it just makes it easier to run your business when you have lower operating costs. So I think the lucrative part of this should be attractive. It's hard to get.
But you pointed out the cogent and compelling benefit and result that they're searching for, and here is the crux. I was asked to do a turnaround on an energy services company that was supposed to be competing against Johnson Controls and Honeywell and ServiceMaster in Denver, Colorado, and then in North Carolina, and then in California. And we ended up building an $18 million energy services company because we went in and said, look, we're going to do everything for you. We're not going to train you to be energy managers, energy engineers, retrofit contractors. No, we're going to do everything. All you have to decide is if you want to invest your money and make a very high return, or if you want us to invest our money and you want to share that return. That's the only decision you have to make. And you're not going to have to sacrifice the progress of your own business to have your people put a bunch of time in on energy efficiency or solar or energy management. No, you keep doing your business full bore, and we provide turnkey support. And I believe that's what is missing in the municipal sector. These groups are coming in and educating the city on everything they can do, and then the city puts their hands on their head and go, we can barely keep up with what we're doing. You want us to become energy managers, contract managers? Oh, my God. Oh, and they freeze. We have to come in and provide the money, the process, and the vendors to do all the work. That's my belief. That's the big shift.
I agree. I do have one suggestion that you should hold a conference in February on Maui and invite all the folks Northeast to come. I think for reasons good and bad, you might get a good turnout. That only happens.
Hoping to do one in December. We want to do two in California, one in the East Coast, one in Denver. And the fifth one, we want to be the culminating one in December or early January, the end of next year. So we agree. Invite everybody when it's cold on the mainland.
Yes.
Hi, this is David again. If no one else has something urgent, I could just make a couple of my other observations in talking about how to talk about these ideas. One of them is making a distinction between impacts on the local government finance and impacts on the local economy. Those are different. And
yeah,
local officials care about both, but they care about their budgets more. So you've kind of emphasized that, but sometimes the discussion of economic benefits, for example, in the example you gave here in Ithaca about the local farmers market, very few budgetary implications. There is a lot of money that comes in to the local vendors, though,
yes,
for that one. There's some city budget implications, but it's much more of a benefit in terms of local economic growth than it is in terms of municipal finances. Second thing is distinguishing between projects that are, if you will, internal to municipal decision making, and by that I mean that you can, you know, things like municipal fleets and so on. You know, they don't really have a high public profile necessarily, unless the municipality wants to give them that one. So it's more of an internal decision making process versus things like, often things like siting a renewable facility requires, you know, public input, significant public input in decision making, and those kinds of things often do require, I hate to say it, but a lot of planning and consensus building, else they get shot down, which I've seen happen more than once.
Yeah, and they get shut down by the prevailing economic powers that don't want to give up their coal-fired energy sales.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, that's part of it, but there, at the local level, there's often resistance to, say, land use changes.
Yep.
That the neighbors are not real happy about, particularly when there's intermunicipal, like a lot of times the city itself this wouldn't be as big a deal at the county level, but the city itself may not have the space to site a large enough facility. So if you're going to put it in a neighboring municipality and it's benefiting the city, there could be some issues there.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm just saying, this is all in the vetting process about what kinds of projects are most appropriate for which kinds of counties and which kinds of cities.
It's a well-taken point, David. Thank you. And what we are advocating for is a lot of parking lot solar. People love shaded parking. And people who want to buy or lease electric cars love being able to have solar-powered chargers close by. And the other thing that we're doing, which is a major departure, is we're using videos to educate and glamorize the beauty of renewable energy and sustainability. When we do our trainings for cities and counties, we lead off each project with a mini video. People love it. Oh my gosh, we never thought solar could be that beautiful. Wow, those people were really enthusiastic about their solar project. Wow, those people were really excited about converting 25% of their vehicle fleet over to electric vehicles. Wow, they're saving that much money. There really are cute little cars. Wow, I never knew what it would look like to have a whole parking lot full of BMW i3s. So we're using videos to educate people, and I use the term with my team to glamorize the excitement of sustainability progress. So that's another thing that we're going to be using. And hopefully that's going to shift citizen thinking a little more quickly. Sorry to toss out a term like glamorizing sustainability. I know that's it's not what we've been used to for the last 20 years. But folks, we believe we need to excite these young people. We need to tell mayors that green mayors get reelected, and tell city council people that green local leaders get reelected, and point out the polls that say that 70 to 85% of Americans want action on the local level to improve the environment and create financial benefit. So the polls are definitely in our favor, but we have to be ambitious and no longer shy about inviting cities and counties to take action. That's my view.
Any thoughts?
Well, I'll just agree with you about the power of visualizations and the difficulty that many people have really turning what for many is abstract ideas into something tangible to know what they're actually getting into. So I agree about the importance of helping people visualize.
And we've got about 40 beautiful videos we're going to use. But go ahead. Sorry, who wanted to speak?
That's Bernie again. I'm pretty passionate about the idea of visualization. One of the things that I think the knocks that solar in particular gets is that it's not attractive. And I've gone to a site, it's Florian Solar. That Florian is actually a manufacturer of greenhouses. And just to your point, Jerry, about showing people, letting people think of it differently, they basically, anywhere you can use a pane of glass in a greenhouse, you can also use a solar panel. So you can, when you make a sunroom, or when you make a room over a swimming pool, or when you make a covering over a walkway, it can be solar panels or glass. And with the panels these days, one is as attractive as the other.
Yeah. In Hawaii, I was one of four citizens. My attorney wrote the initial bill that we presented to the legislature to make Hawaii 100% renewable. And my lawyer wrote the bill, and we flew to Oahu and presented it to the two top environmental legislators. They agreed with us. took us 3 years. And on June 8th, 2015, I got to fly to Oahu, 150 of us there, and Governor Ige of Hawaii signed it into law that Hawaii is the first state in the union that must go, mandated by law, to 100% renewable energy. And I'm proud to say that Governor Brown signed a copycat bill 2 years later, making California the second state that's mandated to go to 100% renewable energy. But in Maui, we are 38% renewable now. 24% of that is wind power from three different wind projects. And we had ridiculous opposition to the wind turbines because people were told by certain people that the wind turbines were ugly. So we made a T-shirt that showed a coal stack bellowing black smoke on one side, and beside it was a picture of a wind turbine. And it said, which one is ugly? So that was a year-long campaign to make people realize, oh, you think wind turbines are ugly? Well, look what you have instead. Anyway, it's a fun media project.
Okay, so this is an hour is actually over. So just to let you know what's coming up here, and this is not the last discussion we're going to have on this topic by any means. So Clina is going to be talking about her work with Dominion Power over in Virginia. She's been struggling with that and made some headway. It's been an interesting journey for her.
Right.
She's an attorney in Virginia. And on the webinar on November 7th is also going to be interesting on advanced microgrids with Larissa Dobriansky talking about that. On November 12th, we're having another microgrid call. And Jerry, can I call you right back? You're on a track. I haven't said anything during this call, but I've been thinking about a lot of things for a number of years. And I also had put together a series of webinars years ago on the steps cities need to take in order to become more sustainable in the area of economically sustainable and using energy.
Nice.
And there were some really good examples on that. That was a long time ago, and I've been talking about revisiting this, but you're on track exactly the way I think is that it needs to be an organized process of steps people can take and not just hit and miss projects here and there. So if you have a minute after this, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that.
Sounds good. When is the Dominion Power talk by Clina?
Clina is going to be talking about that on November 6th.
Great.
Yeah.
I
know what part of it. Noon Eastern time.
Excellent.
So if you're there, I'll call you right back. That work?
You bet.
Okay. Talk to you then. Okay, guys, this is it for today.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you all for coming, and that was outstanding, Jerry and Mark and David and Okshan and Bernie. Okay, talk to you later then.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Right now. Yep. Bye.
Aloha.